and Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, where were we just before? Okay, you were talking about how this led up to what we're going to talk about with the Beatles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you had gotten through the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah.
And they came up with the pill, and they came up with a fix for the venereal diseases.
Yeah.
And then where?
And again, the miniskirt, same thing, you know. And
in the 60s, yes.
Yeah. And
and I must admit, I was one of the wearers of miniskirts.
Yeah. And a whole new type of music just aimed at young people to get them going. And it was sex was plied openly. And it was strange because in the BBC, which was the only television station in Britain at that time, and it's run by the government, you know. And at that time, every employee of the BBC had to come from Eton for security reasons. So basically, these were minor aristocracies running the BBC. And what I noticed when I was small, watching all this stuff, I thought, well, these people, why are the elites giving you a debased culture? Because it was very evident with the shows they were putting on for young people. At taxpayers' expense, by the way, you know, this is all funded by the taxpayer. The elite were giving you a culture which would obviously destroy the culture you already had. And, of course, that's what it was intended to do. And sure enough, they gave you the flower power era, the rock groups, the free love, the pill. At the same time, they began to push for abortion clinics because there was still a lot of girls who didn't go on the pill. And so they got the abortion clinics through, covertly at first and then openly. And and sure enough, we see today that very few marriages have a chance of lasting more than 3 to 5 years. You know? Promiscuity.
That the what? Say that again?
The chances of marriage today.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
And promiscuity definitely has been a big part of it. And they knew in the 1800s that if they could get the children committing sexual acts before even puberty, if possible, then there was less likelihood that they would bond for life with a partner down the road. And that's proven to be true. And during the early 1900s, Lord Bertrand Russell, another member of the aristocracy, had his own experimental schools in Britain where he was promoting this very thing to see how they could change children as they grew up. So it had been tested in smaller areas, smaller controlled groups, before it was let loose on the world. And so they knew exactly how to do it and what the effects would be. So there's nothing ever just blast onto the scene by mm-hmm. itself. It's all programmed.
Very, very carefully and long time planned.
Yeah, and then when the Beatles, of course, burst forth with probably more money behind them promoting them than anybody had ever had before. And so they were famous before anybody really actually heard them.
Yeah, okay, thank you. But now, you know, when I listen to or hear old Beatles songs,
uh-huh.
they seem so innocent.
Yeah.
And so will you explain what function did the Beatles serve and their music?
You have to listen to the words, number one.
Well, I have.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a long day's night and mm-hmm. da-da-da and, oh, hey, Jude.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've listened to the words.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's been a while. Maybe I would hear something different, but
yeah, if you listen to
can you think of something?
Yeah, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Okay.
LSD, you know.
Oh, okay.
And Tangerine. Mind you, we're seeing the Tangerine skies now with the spraying, you know. But they put the drug message, and all the top groups put drug messages through.
But if people don't understand what that means, how does it get to them?
Oh, they knew
Lucy
what it meant.
In the Sky. Well,
you'd be amazed how quickly children figure things out, you know.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Yep. And
you remember Pop the Magic Dragon?
Oh, yeah.
That was supposed to be about, I guess, marijuana.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a cool song.
That's right.
And I would have never thought about what they said that it means.
And it's the same with Burl Ives, you know. Burl Ives before sang the Big Rock Candy Mountain, and it was about homosexual pedophilia. It was an in joke with all of the guys who understood it. And this goes on all the time. You know?
So how does this affect the listeners if they don't consciously understand what the words mean?
It's surprising how much of an effect through subconscious listening. Your subconscious can actually understand more than sometimes your conscious mind, because your conscious is trying to scan things. It's very busy scanning things to censor out those things it doesn't like or whatever. But if your defenses are down and you're not scanning it, it goes right into the subconscious, and your subconscious can figure things out much more quickly. And the magazines as well that they bombarded all the youth with at that time also contained a lot of the messages and explained to the children what these things meant.
Oh, okay.
Like the Rolling Stones magazine.
Oh,
you know.
Sure, there you go.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Rolling Stones magazine was very popular, wasn't it?
Sure, oh yeah. So sure, you definitely have... it was a planned, orchestrated blitz, basically, on the public. There were limousines going around universities, guys getting out and throwing big, you know, like garbage bags of LSD over the walls. And this is all free LSD to get the LSD culture going. And that's how they started it. They were literally throwing bags over the walls for free. And so this was an orchestrated blitz, you know. And even on the BBC, on the Top of the Pops, as they call it, the shows that they gave you, they joked about this kind of thing going on as though it was all fun, and how you know, tongue in cheek this was. It was all fun. And again, I thought, well, you know, Britain has probably had more control over its people. That's why they're called subjects. Than any other culture in the West. Why would the elite not only be allowing this, but actually be the ones doing it? It was so evident, because nothing was published in Britain unless the elite authorized it. So this is coming from the top.
And you were telling me about the writer of all the Beatles songs.
Yes.
And today, what's his name? That owns the...
Michael Jackson bought the rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, well, the Beatles appeared on the BBC once again in the late 60s. And they all said that they were broke. And when they were asked why they were broke, there was a silence. They wouldn't explain. They looked at each other, sort of knowingly. And no one knew at that time why these guys would be broke. Well, it turned out that they did not own the rights to supposedly their songs, and never had. And then in the early 80s, Theo Adorno, who was the actual owner of those songs, died, and the songs went up for sale. And Paul McCartney at that time put a bid in alongside Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson won the bid. And he now owns the rights to the Beatles songs. So the Beatles never have owned the titles of those songs. So,
And they never wrote one of their songs?
I think maybe some of the little drug-induced ditties, I call them, the simplistic stuff, you know, they may have added a bit here and there, but the big ones, no, they didn't, no. And you can tell by the words, too, that someone much older had written them, apart from the fact that much of the music could only have been done by someone who'd studied classical music. And Theo Adorno was a professor of music.
If somebody knew classical music well, they would know that.
Yes.
Because I didn't know it.
Even simple guitarists, if they look at the types of chord schemes and so on, and tempo changes, this is beyond your typical three-chord wonder that you know of so well. And but Theo Adorno was one of the most one of the best professors, really, in Germany for many years in all kinds of music, mainly classical. And he came over to Britain and headed the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and he was best friends with the Queen of England. And he definitely worked with Martin, who was the producer for the records and for the Beatles. And I've no doubt at all it was him who wrote them, because he certainly owned the rights of the songs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
And what was their function?
The function again was to as I say, change society, change culture. Plato had said it thousands of years ago that by his rights, as he said, we should control music very strictly because it affects the minds of the young. And so they knew that from thousands of years ago how the effects can be on the young. And they also knew that if they wanted to give you to create a generation that would go to war, you'd give them marching type songs and tunes. And if you wanted to degenerate a culture, you give them lots of sensual music. And
uh-huh.
And so this was meant to destroy what was in order to create that which might be, as they say in high masonry.
What was for what might be.
Yep.